In one of my chemistry lab classes, I was told that human error is not an excuse to claim why there might be a slight difference in measurement for some kind of product or for some kind of experiment. And this really struck me as odd at the time, because before that I had heard, okay, human error is the reason why nothing is perfect. So if you have an error, it's probably because you made a little bit of a mistake, and that's okay, that's expected, as long as it's within a range. But instead, I learned that there are two types of error which are acceptable. Random error, which is uncontrollable variation, kind of like random noise, and systematic error, in which there's a predictable variation due to a tool or something of the like. So if your scale that you're using is a little bit off, that's a systematic error that is going to affect every single thing and not just one or the other. And these are accepted in the chemistry space. So then it really made me start to think about what makes human error so bad. For one, if you claim human error, that means that you're admitting to doing something wrong. If you said, hey, it was probably human error, that means you made a mistake. And you should not be making any mistakes. You should have corrected it before you moved on to the next step. In addition, if it's human error and you intentionally did something wrong or moved on, it means that it's very hard to reproduce that. You essentially create an experiment that only exists within your own realm of abilities, that's subjective only to you. And that means one thing in particular, and that there was a lack of objectivity that was even followed. Hello, and welcome to Jackie On, a podcast where I, Jackie, talk about my opinions on a bunch of different topics. This episode is Jackie On Objectivity, particularly applied to science fields, but also outside of them. I want to start this by reading or speaking about this notion of what objectivity and subjectivity even are, especially, as I mentioned, in regards to science. Now, one of the ways that it comes up a lot is when you're trying to do a procedure or calculating error or something like that, as the example I gave in the beginning. But objectivity is what many people think defines science, separates it from hearsay and random claims of truth or pseudoscience. Only the notion of objectivity itself is a human-centered farce in and of itself, something used as a wall to block criticism, discourse, and value. The reason why so much of pseudoscience exists is because of the conflict science and scientists have always grappled with when it comes to the perception of scientific objectivity. But for the most part, science has been pretty smooth sailing, right? Most of the time, peer reviews and the scientific method serve as a net to catch all of the quote-unquote bad science that can slip through the cracks, right? Well, not always. To quote Harvard professor and scientific historian Naomi Oreskes, quote, that's the Frankenstein myth, Mary Shelley's argument that if you let science run amok without thinking of the moral consequence of the action, you end up with a monster. What people often forget is that Frankenstein is the doctor, the scientist. The monster he creates is called the monster, but the point of the book is the science is the monster, end quote. The danger of science isn't that it isn't objective, it's that we pretend it's objective and let bad values slip in as a result. If bad science slips through the cracks, it's easy enough to claim that it was objective and everyone else isn't, like what happened with the fake study claiming vaccines cause autism. The net didn't catch it, and by the time it was proven wrong, all the deniers could see was mainstream scientists trying to block the truth, or whatever that meant to them. And I think this is important, because the second we say science has to be objective, or we force it into these certain silos, that's when we really have people saying, okay, well then all science must be objective and is applied everywhere. And so when you have someone who does something with some kind of agenda, like in this case, the vaccines and autism study, clearly they came in with an agenda. They came in with trying to say something about science, and yet people say, well, no, that's not possible because science is objective, and they lose the fact of the matter, and that is that science is not objective. And whenever we hide behind that shield, that's when real value is lost. Humans, by fact of nature, are not capable of objectivity, and we shouldn't have to be. Like what Oreskes claims, it's more about being able to acknowledge that all humans are subjective, and we carry our values in with us. Knowing you're biased and trying to minimize it is much better than pretending your bias doesn't exist. Valuing truth and knowledge are noble things, even if it means being wrong in an experiment. Science doesn't have to be the monster. It shouldn't be the monster. But as long as we cling to the fake ideals of objectivity, we're going to have a lot more Frankensteins. So now I kind of want to take a step back and look a little bit at subjectivity, because I feel very deeply that a lot of times when people are trying to be subjective and cover it up, they package it in an objective way, or when they're trying so hard to be objective, they accidentally let their subjective feelings across. And so I think it's important to kind of look at what leads us to where we are now and what causes this effect in general. How do we get to subjectivity, whether it's intentional or systematic? I believe that claiming something subjective in science can go one of two ways. One is if you look at individual scientists and blaming them for letting their biases seep through, or blaming the system of funding who steer the scientists to conduct science within a particular realm. Both are true realities, but the degree of impact can differ. One, I argue, is worse. To look at the first, in 1973, Stephen Hawking discovered a breakthrough in quantum mechanics, discovering that black holes could leak energy and particles into space. As incredible as this sounds, it was actually an embarrassing moment for Hawking. His work had proven the opposite, as he had told Jacob Bekenstein, a graduate student who argued that the border of a black hole was a measurement of entropy. In fact, one of the only reasons Hawking had discovered this breakthrough was so that he could disprove Bekenstein. And as admitted in his own work, A Brief History of Time, Hawking was willing to conceal this discovery for a time to avoid being wrong. But why would a man praised for his scientific discoveries and heralding of a new age be so annoyed at the prospect of a new breakthrough? Because it wasn't him alone who thought of it. He went on to discover the radiation, which Bekenstein hadn't thought of, but still, Bekenstein dared to go against his work and was correct about it. The idea of seniority and older scientists knowing better almost stopped a breakthrough. The concepts of objectivity in science, of ironclad and stone-faced scientists who conduct their research with only the best of humanity in mind, falls victim to the same petty nonsense that plagues all the rest of humanity. The issue of ego. In Hawking and Bekenstein's case, it worked out, and Hawking-Bekenstein radiation has led to great discoveries in the realm of physics, even shifting formerly held ideas in paradigm shifts. But when viewing the second driver of subjectivity, that's where things get more complicated. As of right now, science is not free. Individual scientists who want to use objective methods and not buy into strange advertisements for life-saving medicine can't do what they like. The reason why is both simple and complicated. Money. Scientific journals need money, universities need money, industry needs money, and as a result, science runs off of money. Science is not open. Crucial research is stuck behind paywalls and blockers, and to stand against this, many of scientists have created a movement towards open science. It was fueled through the COVID-19 pandemic. As the president of Arizona State University and the director of the Open Research Funders Group puts it, open science, quote, is the form of research dissemination and global collaboration that best reduces vexing limits to knowledge that are exacerbated by COVID-19. If rapidly and open sharing research data and papers is critical to understanding and combating coronavirus, doesn't the same hold true for cancer, heart disease, climate change, end quote. This all seems like a great idea in practice, but like everything else, it fails under the reality that most open source scientific research needs to be paid for. That is, scientists are often responsible for paying fees associated with open source research. And as a field, publishing under open source can lead to resentment, biases against scientists who have starred in the field, and biases against women and people of color. Open source science does not conceal the identity of the researcher for peer review sessions, which leads to unconscious biases. These are not issues with the idea of science being open and free, but rather issues with the for-pay infrastructure, a system set up to minimize the subjectivity in science while trading it for subjectivity in accessibility. With these obvious ways to see subjectivity, it's important not to pin science as an enemy of progress and more like an exclusive club, one that usually has the best of intentions, but is controlled from above and tends to be more prejudiced than at first glance. And I wholeheartedly believe that the issue that we have in science is because everything is meant to aim towards objectivity. Because we try to hold scientists to the highest esteem and say that they're objective, we don't consider the fact that they may be open to make mistakes, that they will be letting their ego get ahead of them in some cases, and that they will do anything to make it sound like they have made that breakthrough. That seems almost unforgivable or impossible from a scientific standpoint, and yet it happens a lot. Even in this idea of open science and a for-pay structure, we consider the fact that, oh yeah, open science means all science should be free and open, objective and accessible to everyone. But the way that scientific papers are written and the way that they can be held against different people of color and genders makes it so it's very difficult to actually make that a promise, because everyone is so busy talking about objectivity that no one thinks about how can we reduce our subjectivity. And I think that's really the crux of this, is we see subjectivity a lot in science already. It's undeniable. But how do we make it better? And that system isn't by being strictly objective, because that isn't a thing. And fundamentally, science takes the perspective that everything can be known. The mysteries of the universe are all unlockable. There's a certain amount of ego inherent in the scientific field, which is the same one that says objectivity is a given. The humanities, I think, are more about exploring and knowing that some things are lost to history. An archaeologist isn't going to be able to know everything, since too much evidence has been disposed of, and yet they aim to know as much as they can. This is what I mean by saying objectivity isn't real, because if objectively you looked at the world, you would say the fact of one thing or another, and yet already science has an ego of it that says, yes, we can know everything, but we can't. It's not possible. And at the same time, the observer effect in quantum mechanics shows that the very act of observing an electron or photon causes it to act like a single fixed particle rather than a wave. By measuring and observing it, it changes properties. Inherently, nothing being studied by humans is always going to be the same as when we don't study it. Does this mean don't do science? No. It means stop pretending that there's a way to do things that removes humans from the system. You cannot. It isn't possible. In any system with humans, we are part of the experiment. By assuming neutrality and objectivity with people, we actually give this false sense, false ego of importance and correctness, when there is always room to improve and be better from this like human standpoint. But I also want to go a little bit beyond just objectivity in science. Because during a debate topic I competed in 2022, the resolution was resolved: in a democracy, a free press ought to prioritize objectivity over advocacy, which is a little bit of a mouthful. But quickly, I think it's important to contextualize this in ways that goes beyond science and how we see objectivity play in our everyday lives. Because not all of us are scientists. I see science and objectivity a lot because I read scientific papers, which are kind of a slog to get through. But even in reading the news or consuming speech and talk, that's where we see this lack of objectivity as well. And I think it's important to talk about it and not just cling to the scientific field, because as much as that can be problematic, there are other ways that we could be thinking about objectivity that I think is equally as important. So I want to read out a piece of evidence we used for this case, because when we were doing this debate topic, one argument rose against others, and that's when journalism is objective. The caliber of what is covered becomes the advocacy. The choices made over whose voices are highlighted, especially without any commentary to contextualize, can mean the world's difference. So Singh in 2019 said, "The value and consequences of speech are directly informed by structural and inherent forms of identity, like race, sexuality, gender, identity, ability, or socioeconomic background. When the idea of objective journalism assumes an equality of speech, terrible consequences follow. Communications scholar Midrich points out news publications that reported on lynchings in the 19th and 20th century would include the actions that led the lynch mob to kill in the pursuit of including all perspectives. This objectivity constructed a logic by which lynching might be able to occur, therefore normalizing racial violence. There was a parallel in how publications chose to cover police brutality. In 2014, a New York Times article covering the death of Eric Garner describes him by mentioning his weight. In another Times article, the president of a labor union representing police officers said that had Garner not resisted the lawful order of the police officers placing him under arrest, the tragedy would not have occurred. By including these details about Garner's death, the Times constructed a world in which Garner shared responsibility for his death with the police that killed him." Agree or disagree, you see this a lot in headlines. A man versus a woman will be treated differently, with men committing crimes and being addressed as promising, with a future ahead of them, or by their career. This is objective. It is a fact. And yet the inclusion of the information actually devalues the crime they committed because it takes focus off of it. See, objective information can be used as a weapon. It's not always good. Essentially, in this way, objectivity is not possible, because even if we're dealing with straight-up facts, the facts are now decided to be included versus excluded show bias. If I am trying to talk about a crime that was committed, right, and I decide to exclude certain facts, while the facts I'm presenting and the story I'm presenting is objective, I am not objective because I am choosing to paint things a certain way. I'm choosing what facts to include versus not, and that is not objectivity because people cannot be objective. The facts can be objective, but the way in which you construct them create a picture that is not always full. And I think that's something people often forget, is you can mention whatever facts you want, but it doesn't always correspond to actual truth. And this was my favorite quote that we use on negation I'm going to talk about. Mayer 20. "Democracy has been dying in the darkness for quite some time. Saving journalism will mean saving it from a false notion of objectivity." And I think this goes true of all of humanity. This article discussed how people who have a stake in an issue write compelling journalism but are often disregarded for a lack of objectivity. For example, Black journalists will try to write about issues affecting them and be called unobjective for not following guidelines set by their white peers and superiors. Or alternatively, objectivity was used to weaponize certain journalists over others. Some journalists were called unobjective and their writing was flagged because someone didn't like them, and that was used as a weapon when it wasn't even true. And so we see here now there's an importance of sharing perspective, sharing opinion, and being able to talk about it. Or even acknowledging the fact that, okay, if I'm trying to tell you an objective news story, maybe the way that I'm giving you my facts might not truly be objective and you should check again. And I think even that assumption that we all make as, oh yes, that is objective, as an immediate thought, is problematic. The last thing I kind of want to talk about that I think connects journalism and science very well together is statistics. People really like to use evidence and statistics as reasoning for arguments. I know because I use them all the time in debate. We would use evidence saying this many people are affected by this problem, so you have to vote for us because clearly we're talking about something that affects a lot of people. But statistics can often hide the true story. Let's say I have a survey that says 50% of people think this cloud formation is the best, and I asked 5 people. That's a biased survey because I am not asking a large amount of people. I might not have access to a large amount of people, and yet I am saying something with confidence, and I'm not wrong. 50% of the people I asked did in fact say that, and yet my statistic should not necessarily be the most accepted because it's not telling the full story. The ways in which the questions are phrased on surveys, the ways in the amount of people who respond, the conditions the people are in when they respond. There are so many factors that go into statistics and into evidence reporting that make it unobjective because we are not objective human beings. The statistical analysis of the exact situation might be true, but that's not the story that's told. If I told you that I asked 5 of my friends, 2 of which came from the same socioeconomic background as me, 3 of which did not, and they were different races, and they had different understandings of the world, and one of them had been a cloud watcher since they were a kid, the other 4 never really pay attention to clouds ever, and when I asked them the survey, I simply showed them pictures of 3 different cloud formations and asked them which one they liked the best, and they picked this one or that one based on their responses, and I gave them 10 minutes to decide, and 50% of them liked this cloud formation. That's more objective, because I'm giving you the true story. I'm telling you all the facts. Maybe giving you an insight as to why someone picked something or another. But their reasoning for picking something or another is not always going to be objective. So you see, we can fall into these traps very easily, where we kind of go into a situation assuming objectivity is possible when it is not. And that is the only thing I want to talk about. Not that science should be demonized, or journalism should be demonized, or even simple statistics should be, but rather anything is manipulable because nothing is inherently true in the sense that we're presenting that information at face value. Because the information may or may not be true, but the way that it's being used is certainly not going to be objective in its core. To wrap up, what does this all mean? What does objectivity in science versus journalism have to do with anything? At the end of it all, the point here is that objectivity doesn't exist, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with objectivity being fake for human beings. There's nothing wrong with trying to aim for objectivity and minimize any biases while presenting a complete picture or doing good science. However, when we ignore any instance or probability of subjectivity existing, we exacerbate systems that end up doing more harm than good, because we tell people that their personal stories are not good enough and that certain standards that have arbitrarily been set about objectivity in human beings must instead be met. And that is where objectivity gets problematic. Really, it's important for everyone to just strive for the best, minimize their own bias where they can, and realize that it's okay to not be objective. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Jackie On. I'll catch you in the next one.